Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Father Andy Guffey, and I am delighted, delighted, delighted to be here with all of you. I don't know how you feel. I really wasn't fishing for that, but thank you. I know that you have been waiting and praying and hoping and waiting some more, and here we are. And I, just so you know, have been waiting and praying and hoping and waiting some more, and here we are. And before we go any further, I just want to say one thing. I want to take a moment to say thank you. Thank you to the wardens and vestry, and most especially the search committee, for who prayed and listened and questioned. Thank you for your faithful service to the body of Christ here at St. Mary's. Well, let's try this one. I grew up Methodist, and we did something sometimes. Let's see if you can do it too. I bet you can. This is the day the Lord has made. I thought so. See, I've heard about you. I know you love your prayer book, and that makes me very happy. And I thought you might know that one as well. This is the day the Lord has made because it is God who has brought us together at this time and in this place and gives us the blessing of the living of our days together. God is weaving your stories, the story of St. Mary's in the Hills, and my story, into something new and beautiful. And what else should we do then but rejoice and be glad in it? But wait a minute, you say. What is your story? Fair enough. I'm sure you'd like to know more about me. So I thought about that, and I thought, what could I tell them? And I could tell you that I grew up in southeast Iowa in a small town, and then I went to college at a small liberal arts college in Cedar Rapids. I went on and did a Master of Divinity at Emory University and a Master of Theology at Princeton Seminary and a Doctor of Philosophy at the University of Virginia, which we actually call Mr. Jefferson's University. I could tell you these sorts of things, but these aren't things that get us very far, are they? There are a lot of what, and not much why. They tell you something about me, but not enough of what matters. They don't tell you how my heart comes alive when I see stretches of field lands, especially cornfields, laid out before me, with the sound of the wind conversing with the corn. They don't tell you why I have always sought out beauty or been an acolyte of honesty or always longed to be good and do better. They don't tell you the joy and delight I take in my two children and my wife. So let's try again. Thomas Merton, one of the spiritual masters of the 20th century, once said, "If you want to identify me, ask me not where I live, or what I like to eat, or how I comb my hair, or where I went to school. But ask me what I think I am living for, in detail. And ask me what I think is keeping me from living fully for the thing I want to live for." Now, these are good questions. They're questions that get more to the heart of who we are. So let me try to answer those just a little. I mentioned I grew up in a small town, and that means that I grew up with several sorts of family and interacting with the world around me as though it were a world of family. Nuclear family, extended family, school family, church family, it was all family of some sort or another. Through my dad, and especially in church, I learned the truth of St. Augustine's line, that to sing is to pray twice. Now, I said that at the 8:30 service, and then I realized, wait a minute, we don't sing anymore. Anyway, I grew up in the United Methodist Church, and they taught me to sing my prayers. And as I grew up, I was surrounded by evangelicals right through college, for whom I still hold a love because they soaked me in the scriptures. But it was my love of tradition and the discovery of my great aunt's prayer book that led me to the Episcopal Church. And as I was reflecting on some of this while meditating on this week's scriptures, I realized there was one passage for today in particular that has come up time and again throughout my journey. From Paul's second letter to the Corinthians. Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And all of us with unveiled faces, seeing the glory of the Lord as though reflected in a mirror, are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory into another. There are times in my journey where God has had to surprise me. I like to say knock me alongside the head with a 2x4, but that's a little graphic. But it does say something about what I think I'm living for. I am someone who, in the cornfields of Iowa, in the joys of making music, in the midst of intense academic study, and in the struggle to be good and to foster a common good, through all of that, I have longed to live before God with an unveiled face. To find myself wrapped up in the freedom of the Spirit that welcomes, and to find myself transformed from glory into glory. So what do I think I'm living for? Just that. To live so that my life can become more transparent to God's life in me and through me, in the midst of a community that also longs Godward. And that's the same pattern we hear throughout the scriptures for today. Moses spoke with God and conversed with God with an unveiled face, and he shone with the very glory of God. And what is glory? Let me just take a second, because that's a word that sounds a little abstract, maybe a little too churchy. What is glory? We might just skip right over it, or if we're lucky, we might take a second to puzzle over it. I like to think glory is like the story of the Transfiguration, where Jesus is just Jesus, and then all of a sudden, I think not because Jesus has changed, but because the disciples, sleepy though they are able finally to see something more than what they expected. And Jesus pours forth the unspeakable beauty and truth and goodness of God. As Gerard Manley Hopkins puts it, the world is charged with the grandeur of God. In other words, God is hiding in plain sight around every corner if we only pay attention. Sometimes we need to be willing to be surprised, because God likes to do that. We might find God in the voice of our neighbor or in the lives of those we thought couldn't possibly reflect God. Sometimes we find it right where we expected God to be, hiding in simple bread and ordinary wine, in plain water, and in the voice of someone saying, "You are forgiven. Go in peace." Glory is just that extra that transforms the ordinary into something extraordinary, something holy. It's the rhythm of life behind everything and underneath and in the cracks of everything that turns the commonplace into a sacrament. So what does it mean to live before God with an unveiled face? But to honor who we are, and through that to become a kind of sacrament in the world, to come ever closer to God through Christ and in the Spirit, and to let that adoration turn us to a hungry and damaged world in utter love. You've probably guessed by now that I'm not just talking about my story and my call anymore. I do love to tell the story, thank you, Bell Choir. And in the hymns that I grew up singing, this is our story. This is our song. The age-old tale of the church. And what is keeping us from living for that? Well, we are, mostly. I don't know about you, but I have a knack of getting in my own way, of paying attention to the things that matter least, and not attending enough to the things that matter most. Many is the day I have prioritized my Facebook feed over the call to pray. I know, I'm alone in that, I understand. Endless fretting and frittering over instead of taking time to be holy. And when I have chosen the apparent need to be busy over the actual need to walk in love. And frankly, that's why we need each other. Not so that we as individuals get what we want, but because we all rise together. God has ordained that we should find God not as solitary individuals only, but as communities of love, adoration, thanksgiving, issuing forth in works of justice and mercy. We are together because we have work to do together. But here, at the hinge of the seasons, between the wondrous season of Epiphany, of God become flesh, and the holy season of Lent, the good news is this. God became human so that we humans might be lifted up to God's own life. The goal of God made manifest was always our transformation. But in God made flesh, we hear the blessing God pronounces on what we already are. And while the incarnation affirms and seals us as wondrous creatures of God, each and every one of us, Christ transformed shows what we might yet become and invites us to the transformation and healing of our Lenten journey ahead. Well, we've come some way from my initial questions, haven't we? Right into the heart of the gospel. I hope that's okay. But it's time to bring us back now to our intertwined stories. And if you'll allow it, it's my turn to ask a question or two. Don't worry, I'm not going to ask you a Merton-sized question. Not yet. For now, I just want to leave you to ponder a Mary Oliver-sized question. Mary Oliver was one of my favorite poets, and she passed just this January. One of her more famous lines comes from her poem, The Summer Day. She says, "Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean. The one who has flung herself out of the grass. The one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away." I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention. How to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me what else I should have done. Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, What is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? That, I think, is the question before all of us in light of the Transfiguration. How are we being transformed? What is it we think we are living for? Who made the church? This church, I mean. The one nestled off Joslin Road in Lake Orion, the one that has opened its doors to the local Boy Scout troops, which dug deep to build a fellowship hall and continues to provide for the needs of this community, which has cried with those who cry and rejoiced with those who rejoice. I don't think you need to tell me any more than Mary Oliver did. Who made this church? It was God. However fumbling our faithfulness, however weak our prayer, God has poured out grace here. And your faithful work in this parish, hasn't it always been a way of trying to answer that one question that you knew God was already asking? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild, precious, and holy life? I am looking forward to asking that question with you again and again, to hearing the answers you already know and to discovering what new adventures God has in store for us. Amen.